New card. What do you think?
Get over here!
Hadouken!
That man is playing Galaga.
I understood that reference.
You shall not pass!
So say we all.
So say we all.
Run with me.
It's adamantium tasting time, boys.
Well, maybe it's still number one.
All wings report in.
And welcome to your weekly interval. This is the Best Damn Nerd Show. I am your host, Microphone Alchemist James Kincaid. With me on this episode, the ever stalwart Professor Chris Davis.
Have you wondered why I'm like the one that's always on? I get paid by episode. It's not a season thing like all the others.
Yeah, so. Well, they have an appearance clause in their contracts, and they've already, you know, pretty much maxed out there. So we have to be very strategic with how we deploy them. You signed that, very questionable per episode one, I can ride you like Seattle Slew until the wheels fall off. So welcome back.
You guys are smart, liquored me up before signing.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Good move.
But I appreciate the ever intrepid Professor Davis for being here with me. Because without him, quite frankly, lately, it would have been just me literally yelling at clouds or yelling into the nerdosphere.
Typically a usual thing for you anyways. So it's just putting it in a camera and a mic.
No, I like things usual. That are good. what have you been up to, Mr. Davis?
Well, not a ton in the last week, but I did give that Titan show another shot. Because Marky, when he popped in most recently, had some better things to say about it later on. And actually, it was the very next episode where they did introduce the Doom Patrol, which I don't know who's in charge of casting for the Doom Patrol series, but thank God they changed the actor for their professor guy. Because holy hell, that guy was bad.
Timothy Dalton in Titans?
No. It was some other, and he had some weird accent. I don't know where it was from. I did not like him. He didn't flow well with the other characters. And you weren't supposed to like him in that episode because he was kind of a dick. But I just didn't like the actor. So, man, I'm very grateful that they got Timothy Dalton because he was so good in the series. So that series has gotten a little bit better. And so I'm sticking with it. I'm gonna write it out a little bit more.
Did you go back and rewatch the episodes that you fell asleep in?
I went back and filled in the holes.
Okay.
So let's put it that way.
That's fair.
And in one of the next episodes, they had the new Robin come in, the Red Hood.
Oh, okay, Jason Todd.
Yeah, Jason Todd came and saved the day, and he was a little punk. But he loves some Batman. He's not on fuck Batman level yet. So
he can't be worse than Damian Wayne. So
no, that's true. And hopefully they don't get there. They only got three seasons, so hopefully they don't run through that quickly.
Wait, so Titans is three seasons in.
They're on their third season right now. So
okay, well, given, and we'll talk about this later on the episode, but given how things are going in the MCU. I think it's time for me just to shove all of my chips in on the DC side of things and give that a go. So I'll try and hop on Titans. I'll try and continue on with Doom Patrol and, buckle up, people.
I'm just happy you're still here with us because I feel like we need to put like a watch on you a little bit with all... With the MCU stuff, I feel like you might lose hope in humanity.
I don't know.
Can we get like a hashtag save James going?
A hashtag restore the Kincaidiverse or the Nerdiverse, as it were. I have no faith in the MCU at this point right now. I like people.
the people that create the MCU, but people.
Yeah, well, right now, no, of course not. I guess if there's anything sort of, I'll talk about what I see from people that shakes my faith in humanity later on in the episode, because I did see Shang-Chi in The Legend of the Ten Rings, and I'm going to talk about it. I'll do my best, Davis, to spare you of any earth-shattering spoilers and things like that, you know, but I got some stuff to say about Shang-Chi, so we'll get to that later on in the episode. We will talk about the latest episode of What If, and you know, some other things. But dude, I've been playing The Witcher 3 per our last conversation.
Oh,
you know,
thank God!
Wanting to get into that universe more, so hopped on there, dude. For $10, you get the Ultimate Edition now.
I can't believe it's only $10. If you don't have this game in your library, it's only $10. You're throwing money away. Like you are not investing in your life well.
I know, it's crazy. So I started I'm still very early on in it, still sort of getting acclimated. The main issue that I've run into so far is the sort of similar look to Ghost of Tsushima, but the wildly different controls. So that's and I'd been playing Ghost of Tsushima, so I've messed up quite a few times, you know, even just trying to, you know, mount and dismount my horse and stuff like that. It's just different. The combat engine is different, so that's been a bit of an adjustment, but I am making it. I love it though. It's super fun. It just like the detailed stories, like the thing, like I'm totally gonna get lost in this game.
For somebody that loves lore as much as you do, this we might not see you again for about 200, 300 hour gameplay hours.
They got books. I that one mission when you go to what the Emperor of Nilfgaard or whatever, and there's like this, there you're an entire library before you see Yennefer, and I'm just like, oh, books.
It's time to read.
Gotta get them all.
Gotta read.
It was hilarious how the game started, you know, with that sort of dream sequence with Geralt and Yennefer, and it's the very sort of like I was talking to a buddy about this, the fact that you know, Geralt is definitely wanting to you know, hook up with her again, but you've got to go do like the tutorial mission and train Ciri or what have you. And when you talk to her, she's like, yeah, we'll do it later. And both of the reactions, I know that I've played enough video games to know that there is not going to be a later. This is BS.
There's a couple teams you can get on, James.
I know you've talked to me about that. I got to go with Yennefer though right now, and to be fair, she's the only one I've met, so
yeah, you wait switch real but quick.
It's interesting seeing now, after having watched the animated Netflix movie Nightmare of the Wolf, their Vesemir versus the one in the game. Not how I pictured he'd end up as an old man, for sure.
A little different.
Very little much different. So sort of like Whistler from Blade,
right?
As opposed to what maybe, you know, they got in the animated show. But I'm loving the game. I was struck by how much the voice sounds like how much Henry Cavill sort of emulated the voice of The Witcher.
He bought in.
Yeah, for sure. And that was cool. So to know that like there was that much attention to detail, because as somebody that hadn't really played the games before and only watched you play them, I didn't know how sort of accurate that was. And so that's given me sort of a deeper appreciation. I love the fact that, you know, I knew this was an aspect of the game from watching you, but like the bestiary and, you know, preparing different things before you fight certain monsters and all that jazz, just like super rad.
Really have to plan out your fights, especially later on. Like, and you go a little overboard at times where you think that you need to be
better, be safe and
super powerful, yeah, before you go in. But I mean, there's times where, oh man, you really need to plan out what you're using, and because the better you plan, the more knowledge and lore that you understand about the creatures, the easier they are to defeat. So I think you'll like that aspect a lot.
I guess as I go through, like, tons of side quests or like
countless, just so many, and so many I didn't do, probably that were just along the side, and people will just start talking to you, and then it just creates one. So it's just, and it depends what type of day it is, and so you could be running through, you run through a village once, and it's at one certain time of day, you might not get a side quest because you didn't go back during the right time.
Interesting. No. Interesting.
So there's a lot.
I think my favorite thing I've done so far is stumbling upon a quest item for a quest that I didn't yet have. I think it's the Devil in the Well, which is like one of the first sort of like non-main quests that you can get. And I ended up in this abandoned town, and I explore everything that's, you know, because I don't know if I'll go back. And I ended up in the bottom of the well and found that bracelet that ended up belonging to that, you know, Moonwraith that was the murdered woman kind of deal. So when I went back, it was like much, much quicker to get through the quest because I already had the main item. So that was pretty cool. But anything time sensitive, like, do I have to, that was always my, like, having played like the Skyrim in the, you know, the Elder Scrolls games, knowing that certain quest lines you have to do before you do something else kind of deal. So that's,
I think it will tell you. I mean, I do remember some quests and some side quests not being available after certain story points. I feel like, if I remember right, they do a decent job of telling you, like, hey, some things might not be available after this point. So I think.
Well, I'll probably, my default setting is usually to just do literally exhaust every side quest I possibly can before continuing on with the main mission.
It's definitely one of those games where you get so much in your inventory and you're like, oh man, I'm going to save this for the main bad later on, and you'll never use it. It's just going to sit there, and it's going to take up space.
Filled up my inventory with a lot of rusty swords and stuff like that, so I'm dropping stuff left and right. Beautiful game, really fun so far. I'm looking forward to getting deeper into the Witcher universe and all that lore and good stuff. So good recommendation. And I mean, I don't really have much time to play it right now, but, you know, I'll incrementally get through. So 2 years from now, when I finish the game, I'll be excited to talk about it again.
That's an exciting 2 years for you and for me too. So because I get to hear about it. So.
Yeah. Well, let's get down to brass tacks. Enough of the pleasantries here.
We don't talk about happy things.
Today on the Best Damn Nerd Show, and I've been sort of chomping at the bit to discuss this, as the flames have been fanned at the fans, as it were. I mentioned in passing, I believe it was the last episode, the first look at the Cowboy Bebop Netflix adaptation. Talked about it multiple times now on the show about my trepidation regarding this live action adaptation, what a masterpiece Cowboy Bebop is already. So why are you doing this? It has seemed doomed to fail just from the outset. It's like developmentally, all these different things. And I mentioned last week, they finally, you know, we get to take a look at the costumes and stuff. Like, before we get into that, let us all remember what John Cho said, you know, who plays Spike, the main character. It's an ensemble show, but if there is a main character, it's obviously Spike. That they had little to no contact with the creator. So, you know, he struggled to name his favorite episode and everything like that. And, you know, that we got to keep it strange and just all of that good stuff. So that's what we're dealing with.
Did the creator not want to be a part of it, or did they just not seek him out?
This is where I'm going with that. So Shinichiro Watanabe, apparently his sort of deal with it was that he gave them notes on the show, and that he has come out and said that he has no sort of say in what they do with those recommendations, Davis. And he literally said in an interview, all I can do is just hope and pray that it turns out good. He is not stoked about this at all. Like, he clearly has the same misgivings as the fandom. And make no mistake, it is a passionate, loving fandom. That goes for most animes, but Cowboy Bebop has attained this very, I think, unique place in anime because of its, you know, Toonami Adult Swim sort of role as well for a lot of people. And it's a very strong fandom. And for the creator to say that I just have to hope and pray that it turns out good, that is a sort of startling revelation about where this show is headed. And it just, again, has seemed sort of doomed from the outset. It seems like that they don't really know what they're doing with it. And then so we get this first look at the costumes. And I very briefly mentioned that they even sort of defied my low expectations for it. I had misgivings about, you know, a lot of the sort of the casting decisions. I don't think John Cho was necessarily the right choice to play Spike. Then that interview only served to reinforce my feelings that he was not a great choice to play Spike. That being said, his costume looked fine, approximated more so the anime than some of the others. Jet Black's costume looked honestly pretty lifted straight from the anime, which is great. I think one of the things you want to look at these characters and them to be instantly identifiable, like they are in the anime. And then we got to Daniela Pineda's Faye Valentine. And she was the one, she was the casting that I was most bullish on. Let me just say that. She was the one I was like, okay, I can kind of see that, you know, like she's like the look of her that, you know, if you put her in the Faye Valentine costume, like that could be Faye Valentine. But it was her costume was the one that I was like, that looks nothing like Faye Valentine. Like they sort of tried to approximate the yellow top in that, but beyond that, nothing. They didn't get the hair right. They didn't get anything else right. And we're going to talk about Miss Pineda a lot here in this segment, but it was like they made no effort to sort of get Faye Valentine correct. And I know that the costume is, you know, maybe you couldn't do the Faye Valentine costume exactly right for this live action show. A lot of cosplayers that have done the Faye Valentine costume exactly right at Comic-Con would disagree. Now, that being said, yes, doing stunts in the costume is a little bit different. But rather than completely reinventing it, I think, you know, maybe lengthen it, maybe tweak, change it up. I think everybody, all the fans would have been fine with that. But again, that instantly recognizable, iconic Faye Valentine doesn't exist in this show. They fucked it up. They blew it. They absolutely blew it. Davis, I know you're not a Cowboy Bebop watcher, but
I am interested to watch it though, after all, because I, you know, as you're talking, I realized that every anime fan that I hear speak about this show, I never hear bad things. Like, there's never like somebody in the middle. It's always pretty high. So I am interested to actually possibly give it a shot.
Yeah, I do think that it is one of the most highly and universally regarded animes. Like you said, it's very rare that you run into somebody that has watched the whole thing or watched a good chunk and be like, yeah, you know, I hate it. Or I think there are people that it's not there. Obviously, it's not 100%, but that, you know, for maybe it's not their cup of tea, they're not into film noir or jazz type stuff, but I think if you give it enough time, it is truly a masterpiece, and it has been one of my closest friends during the pandemic. I rewatched it many times during the past year and a half or so, and it's just my appreciation for it has only grown. And now this live action adaptation is making me groan and wail for why are they doing this? And the reveal happened. I don't know if you agree with me. I don't think that they nailed the Faye Valentine aesthetic. And with me saying full understanding that tweaks, I expected there to be some tweaks, in particular to her costume, that it couldn't be an exact replica, or not that it couldn't be, that it wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. But hers is the most vastly different than any of the other characters.
It's the most different, but I, like, as somebody that's just looking at the pictures of the anime, picture of the live action, that's all my frame of reference. I see how they got where they got to, but it's mostly from a, they're trying to non-sexualize it. That's, I was like, this is very obvious that this is what they're going for, and I understand why.
Okay, well, I want to come. I want to come back to that statement that you just made, because I do think that is exactly what they're doing. But I have one question for you first, because I maintain that if I had showed you on Monday a still or a clip from Faye Valentine and Cowboy Bebop, and then the next week you saw that photo of just Daniela Pineda and the costume alone, I bet you dollars to donuts, Davis, you would not have known that was Faye Valentine.
Yeah, probably not.
No fucking chance. That's my point.
I mean, she's got purple hair, so I might be able to.
It's like so much more
it's
muted.
It's very darker, yeah.
Yeah, there is no chance that anybody that's what I'm talking about. Like, the iconography is not there. They missed the boat entirely on Faye Valentine. Now, circling back to the desexualizing of the character, I think you're absolutely right that that is what they're going for. And not only are they going for that, but I think that they are insinuating, we will hear from Daniela Pineda in a few moments here, that the sexualization of Faye Valentine, that they are indicting that from the series. It's almost like that they are apologizing for the fact that that Faye Valentine was like this in the anime. Faye Valentine's character uses her sexuality, uses her attractiveness very skillfully in Cowboy Bebop. She is a sexual character. She's a sexy character. She's hot as hell. She's a total smoke, but she's also a complete badass. It's part of who she is. Like, I was thinking about this and all the uproar and everything like that, and what Netflix, Kevin Smith's of the world, and all these folks don't seem to get. Kevin Feige, throw that asshole in the mix too. What people don't seem to get about this is that a lot of these passionate fandoms and fans are okay with things being changed around a little bit and tweaked and adapted, and understanding that the adaption is not going to be a shot for shot lift or a page for page lift from these things. But you want them to stay true to the characters. You want them to stay true to the spirit of it all. And I have no confidence that when we start actually seeing this footage roll out, that they'll be doing that. And this sort of indictment of what Faye Valentine was before in the anime just shows that they have no appreciation for the spirit of these characters. Like, I was thinking about Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings films are beloved by Tolkien fans. Absolutely beloved, and they were accepted in spite of the fact that those movies made tons of changes to the books, you know. And I mean, I long for the days when the loudest decrier of the Lord of the Rings movies was, oh, they, you know, Arwen wasn't actually the one that, you know, rode Frodo to Rivendell kind of deal, or where was Tom Bombadil? I long for those days. But but in spite of all of that, the fandom, you know, just encircled Lord of the Rings, embraced it, and understood it for what it was, and was grateful for the fact that it respected the source material and gave us those beautiful movies, because it stayed true to the spirit of the source material. It didn't apologize for the source material. It wanted to give us a film adaptation of it, and you know, pretty good for what they did. I think similarly, what Davis, you and I, one of our favorite movies mutually, as well as Imperial Commissar Jet Bud, Count of Monte Cristo, one of my all-time favorite books, and the movie is right up there too. And the movie makes some wild changes. You know, it's a much more streamlined revenge story than the book, because the book is so lengthy. But I think we can both agree it stayed true to the spirit of the book.
Yeah, because the characters, like you said, they're right on track with who and what they should be.
Yeah. And so that's what I think a lot of people miss with these things. And when they sort of misinterpret sort of fans' feelings and what the expectation level is, the expectation level isn't shot for shot lifting. And to the point that even they came out and said, yeah, this isn't going to be a shot for shot remake of Cowboy Bebop. Nobody's expecting that. And I don't think anybody wants that too, especially when they don't have high confidence in the show, because I don't want to, you know, when I think of Cowboy Bebop, I think what bothers me the most is I don't want anyone, when they hear the term or the words Cowboy Bebop, I don't want them thinking of the Netflix show. I want them thinking of the masterpiece that it was. That's what bothers me most about this show's existence. But yeah, just stay true to the spirit of your characters, of the stories of the show, and things like that nature, and you might have a hit on your hands. I don't think that's what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, and to touch on the sexualization part a little bit, what really bothers me is that they adhere to our culture instead of the culture of the story.
Sure.
And this and what that represents, and you know, you don't have to abide by our rules out here when it's a completely different world. It's a completely different setting. It's like you're able to do those things. You're able to tell those stories and show those characters how you want to, because it's not here. And that's what we love. It's something different. And when they do these things because of our culture out here, it sucks.
Well, I think the idea that, first of all, It is a complete misunderstanding of the Faye Valentine character. She is a sexy character. That's part of who she is. Like watch the show. And that's just like we jokingly talked about, I believe, on the Discord, bestamateurshow.com/Discord. Honestly, if there's not a lot of smoking in the show, then they've missed some of the a big part of the aesthetic.
That is something I know.
of the show. So, and you know, fuck it. Sorry. Smoking's cool. I miss Joel Camel. I'm not saying it's good to do it. It's terrible for you, and I don't recommend you do it. But I'm just saying it does look cool.
And maybe in their world, it doesn't get them.
Yeah,
cancer,
who knows? And first of all, I don't need to be thinking about that. I don't need to be thinking about what that cigarette's doing to Spike or Faye or Jet. Just like I don't need to be thinking about a bank loan for an Avenger. Anyway, I digress. The sexualization of Faye Valentine, I think that they see that costume and they assume certain things about her. And yes, she is portrayed as a very sexy character, but again, a very badass character, a very in charge character, a character that has depth to her. Her backstory is heartbreaking at times. She can be frustrating at times. She is a well-written character. And so for them to sort of be singling her out as, oh, well, this character clearly needs to be changed. It's just a bunch of horny little anime fans that want to see this Faye Valentine costume. And that's where we're going now, is that the reaction, as predicted, was piss poor to this first sort of images from Cowboy Bebop. And it's interesting that they sort of, with this reveal, changed their own crappy narrative to an even crappier one. Like, because I think if they got the costume right, it would have been just more of the same of people questioning the choice of John Cho, people resurfacing that interview about him having no idea what Cowboy Bebop is really supposed to be about, and things like that. But because they swung and missed so poorly on this Faye Valentine costume, a lot of fans, you know, were voicing their displeasure. Like, hey, this doesn't look anything like Faye Valentine. And let me be clear. The vast majority of these fans, when they say it doesn't look anything like Faye Valentine, are not talking about the actual physical appearance of Daniela Pineda. Some of them are, and I don't agree with them. I don't agree with any fan that has personally attacked Daniela Pineda for how she looks or anything like that. That's, you know, never something that you want to do. But the actual fans that are just voicing like, hey, this costume sucks. This costume doesn't look anything like Faye Valentine. Criticisms about the costume and the overall look of how they are presenting Faye Valentine are completely valid. And and that is the main sort of conversation that's going on. But predictably, they are latching on to the sort of the worst of the comments, and that, oh, it's just because of her physical appearance and things like that. Of course, she doesn't match the cartoon. And everything that people are latching onto. That's not the complaints are coming about the costume. Costumes are important. They are, especially in nerdy properties. I mean, we talk about them all the time, like especially early MCU. Oh man, how are they going to do Captain America's costume? What is this going to look like? All these things. You go back to Spider-Man, like the choices they made with Green Goblin and stuff like that. You know, it's always been a thing. But now they are turning it into this sort of narrative football that somehow it's just a bunch of scummy, horny anime fans that are, they just wanted a simplified, sexualized Faye Valentine. And if you watch Cowboy Bebop, you'd know that's not what we want. But Daniela Pineda, in the midst of this hurricane of criticism over the costume, decided to take to Instagram and pulled the Kevin Smith. So let's hear from her.
Oh, no. Hey guys, so as you know, our Cowboy Bebop first look dropped today, which was so exciting. And I just wanted to address a couple of things that sort of keep coming up in the comments amongst fans. First, I wanted to apologize to the fans that I did not anatomically match the Faye Valentine character. 6 foot double D size breast, 2 inch
not
6
waist. Foot not double,
you know,
D,
they looked
idiot.
Everywhere for that woman and they couldn't find her. It's kind of weird, so they just went with my short ass. I know, am I right? You know, there was talk about, like, can we put Daniela in a time machine and maybe give her different parents so she has different genetic information to sort of make her look better. It proved to be too complicated. And the other thing I wanted to bring up was I want to apologize that the outfit I'm wearing is not exactly what she wears in the anime. You know, we tried, but doing stunts in tissue paper, things disappear, they rip. Sometimes it just got lost. Anyway, like I was saying, that original costume, they made a couple of them, but like I said, they got sort of slurped up in my various crevices, never to be retrieved again. So we needed to really build something that could withstand the test of time. So, just, you know.
I'm going to run that back.
Hey, guys. So, as you know, our Cowboy Bebop first look dropped today, which was so exciting. And I just wanted to address a couple of things that sort of keep coming up in the comments amongst fans. First, I wanted to apologize to the fans that I did not anatomically match the Faye Valentine character. 6 foot double D size breast, 2 inch waist. You know.
All right. I'll pause it right there. Completely dismissive of the fan base, this sarcastic, condescending apology of Daniela Pineda talking about this, and the fact that she is again giving out, she is enhancing this false narrative that the criticisms are primarily based on the fact that she does not match Faye Valentine's physical appearance in terms of her genetics. That is not what people are mostly upset about. And I use upset, that's not what people are critiquing, you know. And just the ultimate condescension. I want to apologize. 6 foot double D, 2 inch waist, which is not, look, we're getting into anime semantics here, but that's not what Faye Valentine is. So, Davis, your reaction to Miss Pineda's comments there.
She's definitely harping on probably the worst of the internet comments. I'm sure that, you know, it's the very select few. And she's just trying to draw attention to that, where the crux of the issue is on the actual look of the costume. So yeah. it's very, I don't know, it would turn me off as a fan watching this, just like knowing that, you know, people don't take criticism.
Well,
like, we'll take criticism. We don't take it well, but we'll take it.
You know, I think fans of Cowboy Bebop want this to be good, and they want to like you, Daniela. They do. What they don't want is you to come on here, give a fake apology, and make us try and feel bad or feel some type of way, because that's exactly what she's doing when she's pointing out those fake dimensions of Faye Valentine. That is the, like, trying to blame anime culture right there. Like, that she's trying to say that how Faye Valentine looked in the past was unrealistic, was wrong, and shame on us for wanting that. That's exactly what she's doing. And the fact that it's not that they couldn't duplicate the costume and how Faye Valentine looked, it's that they needed to, they had to. And then that to me is just completely ridiculous. Why respond and come at the fans this way? Let's hear out again a little bit more here.
They looked everywhere for that woman and they couldn't find her. It's kind of weird. So they just went with my short ass. I know. Am I right? You know, there was talk about, like, can we put Daniela in a time machine and maybe give her different parents so she has different genetic information to sort of
not even clever or funny. just
it proved
bad.
To be too complicated.
So cringy.
The other thing I wanted to bring up was I want to apologize that the outfit I'm wearing is not exactly what she wears
in the anime. Exactly what she wears. It's not anything close to what she wears in the anime. and speaking of that, like when you're talking about like trying to find different parents and stuff, you know, I know it's very much so in vogue to swap genders and races right now and in adaptations and stuff like that. But oftentimes when you swap characters, there's a little bit of a backlash. I've heard no real backlash for the fact that Faye Valentine is from Singapore and Daniela Pineda is Latina. Not a peep. So, yeah. You know, not a peep from the fandom, not a peep from people out there carrying the flag for certain things. So that was, I found that very interesting. Anyway, I've had enough of her.
But when she talked about the costume.
Yeah, go ahead.
When she talked about the costume just being tissue paper, it's not that small. Like, there's plenty of costumes that have, I mean, it just seems like a halter top modified to kind of have a cross section. And it just seems like a half jacket to me.
Yes.
Like, it just could have been like a half yellow jacket. That seems pretty easy.
It's like if April O'Neil turned her pants into shorts and her top into a crop top.
Right.
She wears a crop top and shorts, Daniela.
It's not that hard.
you're not in a bikini like you were in that show, The Detour, by the way. Little Miss High and Mighty on your high horse crawling around in an outfit that honestly would have not been a perfect simulation of the Faye Valentine outfit, but certainly closer than what you were wearing. It's a crop top and shorts, people. If you need to lengthen it to make it look a little bit more functional or what have you in a live action, I think all of the fandom would have understood. But Faye Valentine, deck her out in the yellow crop top, the yellow shorts, bright yellow. You put the diadem in her hair, you make her hair pop like it's supposed to. And I think everyone would, this would have been a non-story. Again, as a fan, she was the one that I was least worried about. Absolutely. And now she's my least favorite. Now she is declared war on the real Faye Valentine. And Faye Valentine is a tremendous character and needs no apologies and needs no tweaking from Hollywood. She is a timeless classic character. Yeah. Anyway. the Netflix model of fan blaming, taking more pages out of Kevin Smith's book, maybe reinforcing what Kevin Smith said is that, you know, Netflix, as Kevin Smith said, they don't care about you. Hmm. And this is the one thing that I may hate watch an episode or two of this Cowboy Bebop. I'll have to find a way to download and save for all time Haunting of Hill House. But this continued sort of thumb in the eye and just everything that Netflix is doing, how they are treating the fan bases of these properties that they expect us to cheerlead for and watch, you know, them on the one hand wanting to take things that we love and then completely, you know, changing them around and then giving us the finger when parts of the fan base don't like it. Nah, I cannot continue on this carousel anymore. This is the first time I've seriously, well, after Masters of the Universe revelation and Kevin Smith stuff, but now combined with Little Miss Pineda's video, which she then deleted, by the way. Yes. So what a, you know, true bravery.
It's just getting very predictable now. Like if they have a property that comes out and people don't like it, then it's a fan blame and they try to turn the table that way. And it's already old. And they haven't even had that much time to use it, and they keep reverting back to it, and I don't think it's working.
Yeah, agreed. It's not working. We're gonna leave Cowboy Bebop's Netflix adaptation right there. And again, the creator of the show said, "Hope and pray it turns out good." That's what he said. So yeah, this show has
thoughts and prayers.
That is good. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers. This is going to be a hell of a Hail Mary for Cowboy Bebop. All right, we're going to take a break. On the other side, we're going to switch gears. Let's talk about something you know that maybe had a little bit of an uptick.
Fun?
Perhaps. What
Fun
if? Oh. I liked this week's episode of What If on the other side of the Best Damn Nerd Show.
Hey everyone, Chris Aglia here, CEO of the 10O Media Network. I would like to say thank you for checking out one of our podcasts, but we need your help. You can support 10O in a multitude of ways. By going to our website and checking out our latest podcasts, by buying some sweet merch, joining our Discord, or getting early and exclusive access to all content via our Patreon. Your support means the world to us, and you can find everything on our website, www.10-o.gg. That's TEN-O.gg. Thank you again, and now, back to the show.
It's the microphone alchemist Bimbo Jimbo here, of course, formerly the Jedi Master, and we are so happy to be back delivering to you the nerdy content that you need to make it through your Muggle work week. And we want to hear from you, Nerdosphere, so be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Zunes, or other non-name brand MP3 playing devices everywhere, or however you consume your weekly interval. Whether you agree with me that The Last Jedi was a crime against Star Wars, or that you think that my hosting warrants being mauled by a bear, leave us a 5-star review, make us laugh, smile, or cry in that review, and there is a good chance that you will hear it read on a future episode of the Best Damn Nerd Show. So be sure to rate and review us. It's the best way that you can help the BDNS keep saying it loud and proud for years to come.
It's me, Iron Sh- No. Iron Nerd Min-Maxer, Hanzo Gonzo, inviting you into Kitchen... No. The 10O Media Arena to see whose nerdiness will reign... No, we're gonna get sued. If you, will triumph a lotly. Come check out all the battles on the 10O Media Network Patreon, or you can just skip to the parts where Steve physically breaks something for no reason. See you there.
And welcome back to the Best Damn Nerd Show. James Kincaid alongside Professor Chris Davis. And as we've been doing every week here on the Best Damn Nerd Show, we've been following along with the latest Marvel Cinematic Universe on the small screen, Disney Plus stuff that they've been shelling out, whatever.
Slapping out there?
Whatever, yeah, just pumping out there for the droids out there to say it's the best thing since the last thing, and we'll talk more about that later. But we have been following along with Marvel's What If series, and they released their fourth episode. And quick, I guess before we get into this week's episode, Davis, of the What If offering so far, I guess what has been your overall take on the series and your sort of favorite, least favorite episode?
Overall, it's been fairly mediocre and uninspiring. I've had fun watching it from time to time, but it's left a lot to be desired on just not enough creativity for a what if type scenario. I would just want more. From a favorite episode standpoint, was probably my third. The third episode had been my favorite up until this point, followed by the Captain America, and lastly, sadly, the Chadwick Boseman.
T'Challa, if T'Challa was Star-Lord. And
yeah.
Talked Thanos out of destroying, half the universe.
That one was rough. So, had a better what-if moment, but than the Peggy Carter one, but Peggy Carter was better.
So that brings us to episode 4 of What If, and I just want to say, off the bat, there will be spoilers and everything just like usual, but right from the title, this is the best episode of What If that they've done so far. They've gotten everything better in this episode from top to bottom. It is What If Doctor Strange lost his heart instead of his hands, and that's just, I like the creativity of the title. I like the concept going into this already. This overall left me feeling like, oh, this is a What If comic that I would read. This is something that I can really sort of get where they're going with this. The story they were trying to tell was interesting. This was vastly better than anything else that they've released so far. It's not perfect. I still have my sort of same issues that the other ones have at certain points and everything, but this is probably the best single episode of any MCU content on Disney Plus. Is this What If episode right here? It's the Doctor Strange episode of What If.
Well, you know why? It's the Time Machine movie.
I'm glad you brought that up.
All it is the Time Machine with Doctor Strange. It's the same story.
You know what? Maybe I underrated that Guy Pearce classic.
Yeah, you did. And you just said how much you loved it.
Well, in comparison to everything else, context is king. I know a lot of people like Danielle Pineda like to say that context doesn't matter, you know, when you're trying to fan blame and stuff like that. But in the context of everything else, this is the best MCU related episode to come to Disney Plus. And I did have a similar reaction, Rachel McAdams, Christine, right? Mm-hmm. She dies and he wants to save her. And I knew, I was like, dude, they're going to do a time machine. Yeah, they're going to be doing a Guy Pearce. She's going to keep dying in all these different ways. And they didn't disappoint. And yes, in the confines of this show, that concept was working. And, Dr. Strange goes down this rabbit hole of, you know, because he has to watch her die over and over again. This episode, you know, connected emotionally a lot more than any of the other ones did. You know, the irony that this one had more heart when it's about Dr. Strange losing his heart is just... Stop it, Dave. Stop it.
I'm going to get all of you guys to love that movie.
You know what? Maybe we'll bring Adam Zika back and we'll do a movie night on it. Maybe. I might be down after this. And maybe that'll be our series wrap party on What If, as we'll do a Time Machine.
I was just waiting for the final battle for him to just pull him in and just say What If. I wanted it so bad.
You're forgetting one question. What if it is? I mean, it's hilarious that we already have this very time machine movie lifted type storyline here. And yes, it worked well. But what was your overall thoughts on this episode, other than the obvious time machine movie comparisons?
No, I mean, emotionally, it's. I think a lot of people could relate to wanting to change that type of moment in their life if something like that happened, and going over and over and trying to fix it. And it's very gut-wrenching to watch somebody go through that. And I think knowing Doctor Strange character's background and knowing how pompous he is, and just watching him break down more and more as he's realizing that nothing he can do is going to change this. It's brutal and it's dark. I love how it changed him to, and then when the Great One splits him in half, that half of him is searching for all this power to save her and is taking out all these monsters. That was a really cool scene. It was like how he's absorbing all this power from different creatures, from other worlds and other universes. That was fascinating. That was really cool.
Yeah.
But then knowing that he was split and, that battle was going to take place. That was a good concept. If I have one critique, because this was the best episode so far, I do agree with that by far, is that I would like more reasoning behind why these moments can't change. Like, if somebody could come up with something that nobody in any of these types of stories has really had the lore to explain why it just can't happen.
And no one's played more fast and loose with time travel rules than Marvel.
Right.
They change them at the whim to suit whatever story that they're telling at the time.
And so they create these, pretty much plot hole devices that cover those to the best of their ability, but without explaining them. And they just say, oh, that's why. And that's what most time travel movies do. And with this type of circumstance, with Time Machine as well. And And it's I would just like to know more about that, because I love time travel stuff.
Sure. You should watch, if you haven't seen the movie Primer, watch the movie Primer.
I have. It's okay, great. Good. Great movie.
Yeah, I need the. That's due for. We watched the crap out of that movie when it first came out. But I haven't seen it in years. But I think the issue that Marvel runs into is that, yes, a lot of time travel sort of movies concepts, they set the ground rules, and maybe they don't explain them to the depth of your liking, but at least most of them hold to the rules.
Yes.
Marvel is sort of now, you know, started with Endgame and Loki and Doctor Strange and all that. They don't really hold to their own rules necessarily. So I think that's the issue where you run into. But yes, the absolute time, like Christine's death is an absolute time point, and they do nothing to explain why that is. And it is sort of, it's an interesting concept considering we're watching a show about infinite possibilities. So,
right.
That's an interesting sort of explanation that they did not dive into whatsoever.
And it was questionable too, with the description of like if you don't go down this path, then you don't save the universe. But he still wouldn't. Like, in all the other, I don't know, there are so many things that came up with that. It was like, it didn't make sense, but they said it and thought it did. it was like, the universe is still going to end many different ways if he does this. And why would that change him becoming a certain thing? I don't know. It was very, very convoluted.
Convoluted. I do appreciate the fact that the Ancient One split him into two, because we get this sort of, like, we're exploring a darker side of Doctor Strange, of how his obsession led him down this dark path and corrupted him. But at the same time, because of the split, we are also left with the heroic Doctor Strange. And we get to see, super fans of Doctor Strange don't have to just see their character be evil. That ultimately, you know, even though he's unsuccessful, they get to see Doctor Strange try and be really heroic, which is make the decision to try and save his universe, you know, his friends, over the fact that he is heartbroken. He is choosing to remain heartbroken for the rest of his life to try and, you know, save his world and everything. And even though he fails in that, so I was glad that we at least got to see a heroic side of Doctor Strange, even in this darker take on him, which I thought that was a cool concept. I really liked the diving into the lore of the sorcerers and stuff like that, and him going, you know, back to that temple and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. That is the start of that is the one point where I will say that the writing was weak, when he was like saying, hello, like, you know, right. Reading library knowledge. I was like, okay, here we go. Here with the bad stuff again. But overall, especially when compared to the other episodes, and especially the last two episodes, the writing in this was, you know, light years ahead of where What If has been, and their willingness to go full darker, go full like Twilight Zone with this thing was appreciated. Yeah. If you go back and listen to our previous takes, like what is something else I wanted? More Jeffrey Wright as the Watcher. We got that in this episode. Mm-hmm.
That was a cool scene.
Yeah, and you can't do that every time, but yeah, it was a great scene. That involvement was phenomenal. How he was absorbing all these other magical beings, and how it was like you could see it corrupting him and everything like that. Tremendous. Like, really enjoyed that. I do think, like, as much as I enjoyed that, it did harken to what it, like, there's a montage in like every episode of What If, it seems like. And that's, I think, the main criticism that I have overall from a show concept, and we've talked about this before, is the length. I think they need to lengthen it a little bit more, because there's always, by the very nature, so much preamble that they feel that they have to give you to set things up, that by the time we really get going, it's time to end the show.
Yeah. And they're speeding through, like you said, in these scenes of very cool aspects where, man, if they drew some of those out, it'd be even better. Like, it just kind of, draws you in a little bit more into the mythology and the lore of these, some of these characters. And it just, I really wanted to see more of that. And like, where are these things are coming from, a little bit more description behind them. I mean, it just would have been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, another positive for this. It wasn't just taking scene for scene from the MCU movies. It wasn't just swapping a different character into a scene that we'd come to know and love and be like, hey, isn't this cool? They were telling their own story here. They were using the MCU established characters and they were doing their own what if story. I think this episode absolutely delivered on what the promise of the show was supposed to be. It most closely approximated the what if comic series that people loved, and it delivered the promise of what this series was supposed to be. And I really appreciated it for that. And I hope this serves to those of you that are critics of mine and deriders of how I approach things, you know, newer things or things Marvel and stuff like that. I never go in wanting to dislike something. I try and go in with an open mind every time. I have my expectations appropriately managed based on the knowledge that I have going in. And I've disliked more than liked all of the previous episodes leading into this.
Are you just saying you're hindered levels. Because you're smarter than everyone?
No.
Because you have more knowledge?
Not. First of all, I want to apologize to the fans. No. I'm not a condescending prick like that. Well, I mean, maybe. Well. but anyway, I don't go into any of these things wanting to dislike them or hoping that they're bad so that I can I don't – like, honestly, I prefer to like it all. It's just I'm going to call – quality out where it wants quality and lack of quality where there's lack of quality. This was a quality episode. I really enjoyed it. And that is my take on it after having suffered through the previous three and still went into this with an open mind, willing to be entertained. And I wasn't perfect. And I think that there, you know, is room for improvement on this show concept, most notably the length and continuing to do what this episode did, which is not be so married to wanting to just recreate scenes from the MCU movies. Even, and I really liked the Doctor Strange movie. Had too much comedy in it at times, and there was a lot of that stuff I didn't like. I will say that this show had a moment with the two capes when they were facing off right. with one another.
Yeah.
I actually liked that. I thought it was understated. And it was like, you know, I think some people might have gotten a chuckle at that moment of the two capes facing off. I actually appreciated it as a not silly moment. And that's something that maybe they did better than if we had seen that play out in the MCU movie itself, because the cape became a little bit too much of a joke in the movie. So, yeah, they did a lot of things well. There wasn't an inundation of stupid, silly humor in this, too, which the previous episodes have had. The Agent Coulson bringing Nick Fury his coffee and talking about, you know, what he got and all that stuff. So there was none of that here.
It's... I it does make me worry that in future episodes that they aren't capable of making one of these episodes good unless it's darker. Yeah, if they have to have like a good ending, like a possible, like Peggy Carstyle saves the day, all this stuff, and T'Challa's the best, and like they aren't capable of making a positive what if story without all the bullshit. And yeah. And it's not like we only like dark stuff, you know, like Batman isn't just good because it's dark, you know, it's
yeah.
You don't make every movie dark to make it good. But it does worry me that they can't make a quality one yet on a positive light.
There is something to be said, though, that if we want to believe that the timeline that we're living in, you know, as, you know, putting ourselves into the MCU proper timeline. What's wrong with that being the best timeline, the sacred timeline?
Right.
So, like, why wouldn't – I have no issue if most of these what-if stories end negatively.
Right.
And I think, as you just stated, if that's the crutch that they have to have to make entertaining, not silly, not preachy product, then go for it. Absolutely go for it.
It puts more weight behind what our characters and what our stories – are too, because yes. they mean that much more, and because it's keeping our timeline on the right track, whereas these other things end timelines. They end universes.
Yeah.
And if these things aren't the way it is, that's how detrimental it can be to some of these characters.
Speaking of which, the ending of this episode was great. The whole universe collapsing around him and everything like that.
Sorry. Stuff with
the Watcher. Yeah, it was sad. Really great voice acting from Benedict there. And I just really, really enjoyed it. I just wish it was longer.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted more. I definitely wanted more. And to the individual who asked if I fell asleep during this one when on my first watch, I did. I did. But I'm just so tired, so I had to go back and watch it. And it wasn't because I didn't like it. I'm just tired. I'm a tired individual.
You're a sleepy boy, Davis. I understand.
I can't watch these in bed anymore. I need to stay up and just sit up.
Yeah, I don't know. I was very pleasantly surprised by this episode, and I'd seen like a lot of hype from my friends' timelines about how much they liked it and stuff like that, and I was like, okay, yeah, we'll see about that, because you like literally everything that Marvel puts out, so your word is really not worth much to me at this point. But I'll be damned. This is good. And a good step forward for What If. I hope they follow suit. I doubt it, because we still have that Party Thor episode to come.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. So we'll see. Maybe I'm impressed again. Look,
They did tease zombies too, right?
Yes. So we still have the Marvel zombies, which probably will be good. And Party Thor. I assume Marvel Zombies will be the finale.
Yeah. It might even be an hour long. They might even extend it for you. Kind of doubt it.
They should.
They should be a two-parter at least.
Yeah, I feel like overall, just again, stretch it out a little bit so we could get a little bit more walk around a little bit more in these alternate versions of these characters and stuff like that. But What If episode 4, easily the best thing that Disney Plus has put out Marvel related. Easily. Not even close. Better than Black Widow. Better than Loki or Loti or whatever you want to call it. Better than Falcon Winter Soldier. Better than WandaVision. It's this episode. It's better. Standing by it.
I don't know if I can argue that.
See, look at that. Even Davis, who likes Kang and Loki, is on board here.
But that's how good this episode was, though, and how well they did it.
That's how bad everything else has been.
And how good the Time Machine movie is. So
there it is. There it is.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I'm out.
I mean, it really is. The beginning of this episode, very startling. Similarities to the Guy Pearce Time Machine movie. I will grant you that. Well, we're going to stop pondering the question, what if, and we're going to take one more break. On the other side, we will be talking about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings on the Best Damn Nerd Show. It's the Microphone Alchemist Bimbo Jimbo here, and when I'm not verbally super kicking Last Jedi fans on the Best Damn Nerd Show, or fantasy casting The Rock in another movie on the DLC, well, that's when I actually get to talk about wrestling. That's right. Come join me in the Wrestling War Room, where I take my mic to the mat and launch my hot takes about the Wednesday night war between AEW and NXT. The Wrestling War Room. Which side are you on?
Hey, nerd. Loremaster Tim here, and I've come with a rather indecent proposal. We want you to join in the conversation. If you aren't already a member of our Discord, what are you even doing? You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at TheBDNS. And if you're crazy, odds are we'll talk about it on the show. So get kooky, and above all, let's get nerdy.
It's me, Iron Nerd Min-Maxer, Hanzo Gonzo, inviting you into Kitchen... The Tenno Media Arena to see whose nerdiness will reign... we're gonna get sued if you... will triumph a lotly. Come check out all the battles on the Tenno Media Network Patreon, or you can just skip to the parts where Steve physically breaks something for no reason. See you there.
Welcome back to the Best Damn Nerd Show. James Kincaid alongside Chris Davis, and we're going to be talking now about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. I think the pronunciation they're trying to give us is Shang-Chi, but he's always been Shang-Chi to me. So I'm not changing.
You saw the movie. What'd they say?
Yeah. Well, he goes by Sean for a lot of the movie. So there will be some minor spoilers here, by the way, everyone, if you've had not time to go see it and you don't want it spoiled, sorry, Davis. I'll try and keep it minimally.
What I do for the fans to be here.
Absolutely.
You know, to help you get through this.
Give Davis his flowers for being willing to do this. But I mean, that being said, you're not missing much with
I'll watch it this week.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. I encourage you to do so. So maybe we can get more in depth with it at a later time. But I did not like Shang-Chi. it was not good. And it was decidedly piss poor. Like, it was a really bad.
can you rank it in the Marvel universe right now? Like, if you
okay,
were to...
so no, I'm not going to do that.
Because
part of my issue with the MCU droids that just slurp everything, like, this is the best thing since the last thing, and the next thing will be the best thing since this thing. I mean, it's weird how brainwashed some of those folks are. And I see on my timeline things like this. Instantly top five MCU movie. Like, all this, and it's not just with Shang-Chi. You see that almost every time now. We saw Black Widow, top five MCU movie. It's, what are they putting in these people's water? That, like, it is a weird sort of talking point. That everyone does this weird instant top five MCU movie and all this stuff. I am not going to offer the opposite and say instantly bottom five. After I finish rewatching all the other ones, then I will give a more sort of catered review. It's not looking good. I was gonna say
this sounds like a bottom fiver.
I'll say that because here's your headline for you: is that Shang-Chi doubles down on the worst of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Absolutely. And I guess that's where we'll start, because when we talked about this before, my sort of major red flag was the fact that they were bringing back Sir Ben Kingsley to reprise his role, taking one of the ultimate mistakes and first missteps of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which was their bastardization and turning the Mandarin into a comedic character that was played by Ben Kingsley, and bringing him into this Shang-Chi movie. Like, that is one mistake. Like, just don't ever reference it ever again. Just let it die.
It happened, bro. That's, you know, part of the universe.
You know, Kylo Ren, you know, let the past die. Kill it if you have to. So
they confirm that he's the Mandarin.
Let me tell you what they did with Trevor Slattery or whatever his freaking name is. Yeah. They bring him back into this movie. And I think you and I, what do you think that they would do with Trevor Slattery here? Because now we're getting the real Mandarin.
We talked about it. And what we said was pretty much guaranteed was that he was in for a cameo to be slaughtered for portraying the Mandarin and, like, doing this whole disservice to, you know, the Mandarin.
Yeah.
So that's what I was expecting, and it's not sounding like that's what happened.
You failed to ask the question, what if Marvel what if Marvel wanted to keep this silly ass character around and give him even more screen time?
No.
Kingsley's Trevor Slattery is one of the sort of Fab Four characters in this movie. He plays a big role in this movie. Yes.
What?
He is not.
Why would they do that?
Not summarily executed for crimes against the real Mandarin. And he is a major character. He leads our heroes to their ultimate destination with the help of this mythological creature. They find him locked up. He's serving as the court jester to the real Mandarin, who is still a fake Mandarin, in my opinion, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. And he is even more comedic than ever. In a comedy that is rife with too much comedy and jokes that fall completely flat, most notably the character of Katie, played by Awkwafina, And she is the worst MCU character since Ben Kingsley's Trevor Slattery, since Pat Denning's Mew Mew girl from Thor. Like, instant, that I will give you right now, instantly charts among the bottom of Marvel's characters. Marvel's Katie. Oh, look upon my works and despair.
Two in one film? They got Kingsley and this character?
Yes, awful.
Two in the bottom five in one. That's impressive.
Yes, tremendously bad. But yeah, what we expected would almost be a given that they would try and make up for the sins of the past by killing Trevor Slattery, fake Mandarin. No, he leads our heroes to their destination, constantly making jokes. The big Yikes. Battle, making jokes. Like, it is Jar Jar Kingsley. Like, he's worse.
Can they take away his knighthood?
Yeah, exactly. Defrock him or whatever it is. Take it away. Like, the fact that he would do this, like, he must be hard up for money, dude. Because, like, this is so bad. And, you know, without, minor spoiler, Davis, okay. He lives. Right. He's still alive. So he's going to be, my guess, is going to continue to pop up in these movies. It's right. Just awful.
Why did they do this?
I don't know.
I can't. It's getting harder to defend some of these choices.
It absolutely is. And, you know,
on the other side of things, you know, for make sure that we're looking at everything from all angles. It's getting harder and harder.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to you watching this movie and sort of giving me your reaction to it and everything like that. Because I know you're much more forgiving than I am of these.
But I mean, even watching the trailer, I mean, it looked like it was going to be a disaster. So I have to ask, so how much do they just completely take away the power of Abomination?
So Abomination is very much so a cameo. Like, very, very much right. So, which I think we expected. He is, spoiler, he's fighting not Shang-Chi. I'm trying.
So not even the hero. Okay.
He's fighting Wong from Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Who Wong makes a few appearances in this movie. And Wong does like a kind of a cool Doctor Strange thing, which Abomination throws a punch at him and Wong essentially portals his punch into Abomination's face. But then you find out afterward that they were sort of scamming the system anyway. That it was like they're, you know, sort of take a dive kind of deal.
Okay.
Which threw me off because that makes Abomination seem like he's got everything under control and is now like quasi, like could be a good guy.
Like, so he's like Intelligent Hulk now or?
Ish. Yeah. So it was.
He's reading books with glasses.
Not great, Bob. did not like that whatsoever. That fighting ring though, we got to see again. I'm sorry, Davis, but it just has to be. It's what it is. Shang-Chi fights his sister, who I believe, you know, I'm not the most expert on Shang-Chi, but you know, I don't think there. His sister, I believe, is just a made-up character for this Marvel movie. She does not have any sort of source material basis to exist on, and that makes a lot of sense to me because one of my takeaways from this movie was, yeah, I could have done without that character altogether, and it wouldn't have made really much of a difference to me in the movie. Like, it was sort of it was sort of like splitting the heart of the film in two as opposed to telling one good heart-filled story with Shang-Chi. You know, that so that I would actually be maybe gripped to that character and buy into him, but then you split it in two by adding this sister and none of it worked. And so I would have deleted her character immediately from it because she was just sort of it was like a hat on a hat, as my friend Mark Abrego would say. And so, yeah, she was completely unnecessary. And
they needed more comedy.
She was not a comedic character. I will give her that. 100% a straight-laced character and better than all the other characters. Take for that what you will. Kicked Shang-Chi in the balls in their fight, too, because, you know, we love that. We didn't get enough of that with Lady Sif and Loki in the series, so we needed more of that here. But the so it, I talked about that splitting the heart into with this movie, and it goes right along that. I don't think Shang-Chi was well cast. Whoever is playing, I've not really seen him in anything. Simu Liu, and I don't think he really looks like the comic book character. And again, not that I am a super expert on Shang-Chi, but he didn't really pull it off to me. It wasn't believable, and it didn't really work.
Is it more like him representing his power base, his character base?
All of
it. Like what? Yeah.
He didn't seem believable fighting. He didn't seem his performance was not very good. He felt like a passenger in his own movie. Is the main thing that I would say. Mm-hmm. He like the performance was bad, but more importantly than that, it felt like he wasn't really taking the focus of it. Like they're like, don't get me wrong, like, it's a Shang-Chi movie. And stuff, but it never felt like he really seized the spotlight. He was just along for the ride. Quite literally, at one point in the movie, when Trevor Slattery asked him to sit in the back seat. He was just along for the ride. Was not gripping emotionally whatsoever. With his backstory, some of the flashbacks, I thought I get what they were trying to do. But the first like major flashback that they give, outside of the opening of the movie, they punctuate it. They cut it off because Shang-Chi is telling the story on a flight and they're interrupted by a very ignorant stewardess, flight attendant. And like, so it kills all the momentum of this like serious backstory that he's giving.
I was going to say the one thing that we thought going into it on the story was that the heart and soul of this movie could be related to his storyline with the Mandarin, his probable father that we assumed. So did it deliver on that?
So the Mandarin is his father. Okay. And I think the father's performance was fine-ish, not nearly villainous enough.
Not Mandarin enough.
Totally. Like, I still don't think that we've gotten the Mandarin in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, there's a redemption arc in there for him. There's all these different things.
For the Mandarin?
Yes. Hmm. And especially weird. It's all weird considering how they set him up in the opening of the movie too, because they do this kind of, it's almost like out of the shadow, how they set up the Mandarin, you know, this like sort of warlord. He found the 10 rings, which I'll go back to that in a second. So he finds 10 rings. He makes him immortal. He's accumulating power. Like and that's all he wants. Like they hammer home that he is this warmonger that wants to acquire more and more power and does all these nefarious things throughout the years and stuff like that. And then we're just supposed to forget that when he falls in love with Shang-Chi's mom and like he puts the rings away and everything's like all hunky dory, like the now becoming more and more trademark Marvel morality complex that they have, like with Rachel Weisz in Black Widow and Wanda and WandaVision and things of that nature. But so we're just supposed to forget that, you know, he was this bad guy because he fell in love with Shang-Chi's mom. And how did she fall in love with that ass? I don't know. But it was questionable. It was highly questionable. And it goes from there. And we never really we see him like training. We never really see him do all of these. We never really get to see him be a full villain, I should say. We never really do get that. And so that was disappointing, even as opposed as I was to him being in this movie, because the Mandarin should not be taken from Iron Man and given to Shang-Chi. They did that and they didn't even really do the Mandarin. So that was bad. And again, his performance was fine. It is what it is.
Will you remember his performance? Is it like anything memorable?
No. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Not very much of this movie is very memorable. A lot of it is very forgettable. They had some cool visuals. I will say.
You'll remember that one.
they did have some cool visuals, particularly in the latter part of the film. And one really cool one in the early going when he first meets Shang-Chi's mom and they have their fight. There's some cool sort of stuff they do with the forest there and like the leaves and everything that, mm-hmm. yeah, I really liked. The fighting in this movie was incredibly underwhelming. You'd expect like a movie like this that the choreography would be tremendous, and there were moments that it was okay, but it was nothing so unique or so impressive that stood out. In fact, a lot of the fighting made people laugh in the theater because in particular a couple of the most serious fights, they make look like a dance. They absolutely make it look like a dance routine. And I love a good cinematic dance routine. Look no further than Mask of Zorro with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Antonio Banderas. Sexiest scene in movie history. But literally, they do these like weird slow-mo close-ups on faces as like fists go by them. And they're like looking directly at you into the camera. And people just start laughing because it's so absurd. And so poorly done. And so the first fight, they do that sort of dance with him and his mom. And I get that they're trying to make that a romantic moment and stuff like that. But okay, so that's them falling in love via this fight. Then you do the exact same dance when he's fighting with Shang-Chi towards the end of the movie. It's like, dude, you got the dad and the son dance. Now we're getting broad-minded, Marvel. So yeah, my goodness. It was... the fighting left me underwhelmed in a lot of aspects, other than the sort of visual aesthetic, and particularly the first fight, like using the forest and the use of light and stuff like that was very cool looking and, invoked sort of just memories of, other similar settings and stuff like that, which was cool. There were some definite Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon vibes, which I liked.
What I felt like when you were describing that was like Bushido mm-hmm. Blade, Crouching Tiger. That's
yeah, and I think that, without wanting to just rip off Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I think like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon has memorable, unique fights in it. Mm-hmm. Like there's a reason why that movie to the Western audience was like, oh my God, because it was a lot of our first sort of experience like looking at that style fight choreography and things like that. This was not that. It was definitely not that. It will not stand the test of time, like I believe Crouching Tiger has and will continue to do so. So the Ten Rings, Davis, the Ten Rings. Let me be clear to everyone out there. Those are bracelets. Those are not rings. So
it's the 10 bracelet clan.
It's the 10 bracelets. Yes.
And they make noises.
Like, why can't you just give me, I understand that technically by shape, yes, they are ring shape, but those are not the 10 rings of the Mandarin by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think they look cool with how the fake Mandarin uses them. I guess fake Mandarin number two at this point, but they like how he like shoots the blast and stuff. None of it looks good. The only time it ever looks good, sorry, Davis, is when at a undisclosed time in the movie when Shang-Chi sort of takes control of them in a fight and has them sort of encircling him like protection. Like that's the only time they ever look sort of cool. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Kind of deal, but how fake Mandarin 2 uses them throughout leaves me flat, and how they are utilized in the climax of the film as well. So it just was poor delivery, and it does. I mean, MCU trying to have their cake and eat it too, and utilizing the same iconography from Iron Man 1 with the 10 rings and stuff like that. Remember, the 10 rings were the group that kidnapped Tony Stark in Iron Man 1. Right. So. And we give that guy a little bit of a redemption arc here in this movie. That's cool. And I do believe that no one's beyond redemption, but it's just like we get the montage that he's an evil guy. And then he sacrifices some people to try and get into this hidden village. And then he magically falls in love with this woman that makes him a good guy. I don't know. I mean, take it up with
that. Is there still a chance that we get the Mandarin going forward?
I do not believe that we will ever in the MCU get a good Mandarin adaptation. I think, look, it's already, the writing's already on the wall because Tony Stark's dead. And right. I know we're doing the multiverse stuff. And while I think that they might get Tony Stark or Robert Downey Jr. to cameo or do some appearances in future movies, I think that's definitely possible. I think that for us to really get Robert Downey Jr. back in the fold fully, this is going to have to flop. Eternals is going to have to flop. Like, Marvel is going to have to suffer a string of humbling defeats for right. them to be like, okay, we need to go back to formula here. We need to go back to what was really working. So there will be no reason for we're not getting the Mandarin. All right. This is what we got. That's all we're going to get.
That's sad.
But as I say that, now I think about a post-credit scene, and it still won't be the Mandarin, but I wouldn't be surprised if that character uses the name. So no. I'll just say that.
No. No.
I will just say that the post-credit scenes definitely point to where I think the next, God forbid, that he gets another solo movie where Shang-Chi 2 could be headed. Which, you know,
I don't want to start my Saturday, James.
It was a spoiler, pulling back the curtain of what we're recording. It was akin to how the post-credit scene of Mandalorian season 2 played out. Let me just say that. It's like, clearly they saw that, or like, oh, we'll just do this. And then the panned out preaching commenced after that. The other post-credit scene was very much so a changing of the guard sort of endorsement moment, where Wong grabs Shang-Chi and Marvel's Katie, Awkwafina, terrible character, awful character, who, even though being just a complete comedic sideshow, Davis, she literally, like, this is where Marvel fell in love with their own legend. It was worse than when Chris Pratt started dance off or whatever. She starts singing Hotel California in the middle of a fight with like one of the sub bosses in this movie. It was horrendous. So this character has been this character that's been a complete joke the entire movie, also she all of a sudden at the end finds herself and is able to do stuff. So that was great. So Wong takes them back to, you know, the Avengers, whatever locale, and Carol Danvers and Bruce Banner Skype in to sort of welcome them. They don't say welcome to the Avengers. They say welcome to the circus, but that's essentially what it is. And in this post-credit scene too, Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, does the same damn thing, which, oh, I got the situation, I gotta go. And it's like, oh, she does that a lot. Oh, I just, oh.
She'll come back when we need her.
God, well, we don't. All I need you, Carol Danvers, is to give Rogue flight and super strength. And you just stay in your old bed.
We're like 5 years away from that, probably. When the X-Men get entranced in the MCU here. I think
they would never let it happen. They would never do it that way. Rogue's just going to have those powers. You know, maybe she'll like take them from Jude Law's character or something like that. They'll never let that happen. Guaranteed. So, let's see. I'm glad I remembered to bring up the singing in the middle of the fight. Yeah, that was really bad.
This sounds like a hard watch. I'm not gonna.
I am going hard on it though, and you know, I am by default a harsher critic of these more recent movies than you are, because you liked Loki. So your credibility is already out the window. So
I'm mostly disappointed to hear about the fighting, because it's a kung fu movie, a kung fu character that I think they haven't got to do yet. They could do a lot of fun stuff with it. They could do a lot of very visually stunning options with it. And it doesn't sound like it delivered on that.
It definitely, in my opinion, the fighting was, other than the times where it led to literal laughing in the theater and everything like that, was inoffensive. It just didn't stand out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they did what they could. It was Shang-Chi, you know, and
it's like, well, we're doing this guy, so
I guess that's the funny thing to me, I guess, about that scene where they're sort of welcome to the Avengers. I was like, really? Like, okay. I mean, that guy couldn't get people to read a comic, you know. I don't think he's gonna put butts in the seats as part of this new Avengers team.
That's why you put him in a group, so you still have him around, but you don't necessarily have to make his movies because he's in that one, and you can shoot him there.
It's really one of the first times that I felt they've missed so badly with the casting of a lead character. I guess you could look at Danny Rand from Iron Fist as well, you know, that just he just didn't sort of really bring any sort of heart and soul to the role whatsoever. But he did not do it for me. He was a passenger in his own movie. His performance went right part and parcel along with that too. He did nothing to sort of seize any of the moments that he was given. And, you know, I think in an ultimately forgettable movie, I think most people, unfortunately, will remember the other characters more. They will remember more of the former Sir Ben Kingsley. They will remember Awkwafina's terrible Katie. They will remember his sister, probably, I think a lot of people would find more of a memorable character. His dad, he was just such a zilch in this movie, I felt, unfortunately. Cool visuals with the, you know, Ty Lau and stuff like that. There was some cool magical stuff in this. Hated 90% of how the Ten Rings look. So I guess I hated 9 out of the 10 rings.
Is there any good characters? Like, if there's one standout? No. Getting nothing, folks. He's really thinking hard. This is brutal to watch. It's perplexing him. Yeah, that's a no. If you can't think of one off the top of your head,
I liked the protector.
No. Sure.
There's a protector character that I thought was cool. So I'll give you that. I thought you know, all these Marvel movies, you have to sort of have like putty type bad guys to go against, you know.
Yeah.
Those were cool. The good choice on how the sort of concept behind the like sort of there's some Lovecraftian stuff.
Okay.
In it that,
okay.
I like that. I dug that. But it was felt so rushed that, you know, we could have done with more of that. So, you know, Michelle Yeoh's in it.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, she's good.
Okay. Was she actually good?
Because she's
in it.
Yeah, I mean, her role was pretty small, but, you know, she was, it was good to see her. I almost feel like it was almost like pandering, though, to bring her and be like, see?
We got her.
This is good, right? But yeah, I mean, this movie could not overcome a bad cast of its lead, could not overcome two of the worst characters in Marvel Cinematic History.
I can't believe they left him alive.
Yeah.
That is so unfortunate.
It's and not only left him alive, Davis, but he plays a big role. In this movie,
so sad.
And it's so bad, and you couple that with the fact that we already have an annoying, stupid, comedic character in this movie, and it's just, and we're also like the teased romance at one point. I'm not gonna say with whom, but the teased or implied romance, not buying it for a second, not for one friggin' second. This movie was a fail, and it was fun going to the movies. I've loved going back to the movies, you know, and shout out Final Boss Chris Seglia and, you know, Tenno folks that were there that set up this private screening for us to go to. That was cool. I didn't realize you could do that. It was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
So yeah, had a good time doing that. I love going to the movies. This is what I want people to understand, you know, when you invite me out to things, even if I don't like it, I'll wear it in silence and just, I love the fellowship and the camaraderie with everybody. So You know, and I did. I think I just let out one audible buh when Carol Danvers did her thing, but
at least that was at the end.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah. It was whatever. yeah, but imagine me. I was able to stay silent for Sir Ben Kingsley's role in this.
So, that's impressive. Know, that is impressive. Yeah.
And it was tough, but
well, I can't say I intend on giving Marvel my money with this movie. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, pirate it, torrent it, don't support it. Do not
let
support
them know
this
is a failure.
This is the whole thing, and like I'm dead serious. Like, do not like spend money on this. Like, do like they Marvel needs to learn. They need to take some major L's. You know.
Oh,
so,
well, don't worry, Eternals is coming up.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this movie needs to do the drizzling S at the box office. Eternals needs to you just have to stop supporting bad content. And
what is
you know,
the next
that goes across
movies?
Like you have control over so little, and it is getting to the point where it's like I don't want to support this with my wallet anymore. I don't support Disney Plus with my wallet. I'm getting close to not supporting Netflix with my wallet, although I am just so tempted to see the train wreck. And that's almost what it feels like a lot of these things are leaning into for certain parts of the fan base. Like, you want to see how bad it is. I know you do.
So
but, yeah, find a way to pirate this, everyone out there. Do not go see another movie and then sneak in to see Shang-Chi, you know, support another movie that maybe needs it more, and then, you know, just dip into Shang-Chi.
So we got this one, Eternals, and then the one that might save them this year.
No Way Home.
Yeah.
Yeah, No Way Home's going to do big numbers. It's freaking Spider-Man. Spider-Man's been the name on the marquee. He's the, you know, he's Marvel.
That's unfortunate, because if they got three in a row, you might start to see some changes. But
well, Black Widow, Shang-Chi, The Eternals. But you're right, though, No Way Home, I think, is going to be so successful, even if not monetarily because of COVID and stuff. But it's going to be so like that. There are people that already have their reviews positively written about No Way Home just because that's what Marvel people do. Yeah. And that's just what they do. I have my own misgivings about where that's going to go. Yeah, we're going to. Yeah.
Remember these characters?
Yeah. Well, no. And what it will serve to do is to probably prop up all of the lesser, newer characters that they've done. Like, I'm sure Tom Holland's Spider-Man will probably reign ultimately supreme over any of the other ones that they bring in. I'm sure Fat Ned Leeds will probably have a lot of hero shine moments and crappy MJ. Sure. They bank on your nostalgia, and then they will deconstruct it in front of you and expect it to be like, you like that, right? Like, no, we don't like that. And hopefully they start learning some tough lessons. So yeah, find ways to consume this without paying for it. It would be my ultimate recommendation.
You got one here.
Yeah, good. See, I appreciate you're doing the Lord's work.
Yeah.
That is going to do it for this edition of the Best Damn Nerd Show. Have a great week, everyone. And remember, if you're a nerd, always say it loud and say it proud.
Hey, everyone. Chris Seglia, CEO of the 10O Media Network here. Thank you so much for listening to our content, but we need your help. Please rate us 5 stars, subscribe, and give us a shining review wherever you listen to this podcast. It really, really helps us out. And one more thing. Please tell a friend if you can. Tell them Tasty Steve, Hanzo Gonzo, Mark Mann, Rip, Ricky Replay, or someone who everyone loves sent you or something. That might help. Anyway, again, thank you for listening. And if you want more, make sure to check us out at www.ten-o.gg. www.10o.gg. You're listening to the 10O Media Network.